All right, Suzanne, thank you. Let's welcome in State Representative Jason Nemus. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you, Jerry. Good to be with you.
All righty. You were at the head of the impeachment committee and ethics review and so forth. And we heard the word impeachment thrown around so much in various directions. Is all that now laid to rest? Is that what I understand that's over with the governor and with respect to the attorney general?
Yes, we received three petitions against the governor and one against the attorney general, and the committee met and decided to recommend that no further action be taken. And, Terry, I know it's kind of like the word du jour right now, but when we're talking about impeachment, we're talking about overturning an election. And while a number of people on the committee were very upset with things that Beshear had done and some were very upset with things that Cameron had done, the question is whether we ought to overturn the election. And that's a mighty high standard. We've never impeached a governor in Kentucky, and the committee decided that the allegations, even some things we objected to, did not rise to the level of being impeachable.
But in terms of overturning an election, you mean an impeachment wouldn't have removed Andy Beshear or Daniel Cameron from their respective offices?
Well, what it does, Terry, is it is an announcement of the House of Representatives by the House of Representatives that the governor should be removed from office. So then you vote in the House, and then you go and you try the case in the Senate. And if the Senate votes to remove the governor, that's exactly what it means. So impeachment is not just a reprimand. It has a consequence, and that consequence is the House of Representatives is saying Governor Beshear should be removed from office, and then we take it to the Senate, and we'll see if they agree or not. So that is that's the intended consequence of impeachment. And so when I say overturn an election, I mean exactly what I say. He was elected in November of 2019 without my vote, by the way, and he'll be without my vote in 2023. But the question is whether he should be removed from office for the things that he's done, some of which I strongly disagree with, and other members did too. So, yeah, it does. The intended consequence is removal of office and overturning an election.
And some of the things you're referencing, meaning putting lockdowns and closing on church, accessibility to church and these sorts of things during the pandemic, correct?
Right. There were a lot of things to it. There were eight allegations against the governor. Most of them were easy to dispose of. Two of them had such seriousness that required us to look more into those. One was the travel ban, which the courts knocked down immediately. And to the governor's credit, and this, I think, would have been a very different conversation had he not done this, the governor immediately backed down and removed his executive order when the court said that it was unconstitutional. He did the same thing with the churches. It was a problem, we think, that you could do a lot of things, but the governor barred you from worshiping in person. That's a First Amendment right. And so we had problems with those things, but we determined that they did not rise to the level of impeachment because the governor immediately backed down and because it was not so far out of the bounds. You know, a lot of other governors did similar things. That doesn't make it right, but it certainly doesn't make it right. But it does make it understandable, and it doesn't rise to the level of impeachment for those reasons. So that's what we decided. And there is a response, Terry. Two responses. One, legislators come back and restrict the governor's ability in the future, and we've done that. But for the churches, for particular, we said in future emergencies, the governor cannot, without legislative approval, the governor cannot restrict in-person worship. So that's one response. The other response is of the people, and that is what it ought to be. And that is the next gubernatorial election in November of 2023, when Beshear is on the ballot again. If anybody is upset with what he's done, as I am, we take it out on him in the ballot box. That's the American system. And so that was the committee's decision here.
Is the legislature going to make a move now so that private citizens can't file for impeachment that would have to be done by elected officials in the House or Senate?
There's been a bill to do that. Representative Taney from Northern Kentucky has filed that bill. I haven't thought about it much because I thought it would be inappropriate for the chair of the committee to opine on that question. Now that the work of the committee is effectively done, I'm looking at that bill. I do think there should be some changes. We certainly shouldn't allow any person to start this process. I'm okay with
Jason. We're getting some
more than just a few.
Okay, you dropped out a little bit there. Go back and say that again. The last 10 seconds about private citizens filing impeachment.
Yeah, so the law allows private citizens to file impeachment. I'm okay with private citizens being able to do that to some extent. I think that's a good thing. But one person or any Kentuckian shouldn't have the ability to start this process. They should have to show much more support for that. Now, here they would have, Terry. I mean, there was three petitions filed against Governor Beshear. 90,000 Kentuckians joined those petitions. So any standard you put would have, you know, started the process here. I do think the process should be reviewed and altered in some way. I think the people should have retained some ability to do that, but it shouldn't be so simple.
There was passage today of a resolution to create a Kentucky Election Integrity and Security Task Force, and you were quoted as saying, quote, "There are elections stolen in Kentucky." Do you have proof of that?
Yeah, of course I have proof of that. I wouldn't have said it if I didn't. I'm an attorney. I've argued elections cases all over the state, and I've even argued an elections case in the Kentucky Supreme Court. There was a case, election out of McGauffin County, where I had a client who actually served prison time. So there's no doubt about it. I also said, Terry, which was not quoted, I wonder why, but it wasn't quoted. The next sentence was, it is not prevalent in Kentucky. It does not happen often. It's extremely rare. So our elections, we have it there. They're full of integrity. They can be relied upon. It's very rare that you have any vote stolen, but it does occur in some ways. What this Election Integrity Task Force would do was, I think it would give comfort to the people on the right for 2020, the people on the left in 2016 when they thought, you know, Russia was involved in stealing the election. I think it would give both sides comfort, and that's what I want to support. Do I think it's prevalent in Kentucky? No, it is not prevalent in Kentucky. Our elections are solid, and we can rely on those. Our Secretary of State and our county attorneys and our governor did a good job this past year on expanding the vote during COVID, and I support that. So, yes, what I was quoted as saying is accurate, but it wasn't the full quote. People want to know, can I show the receipt? I did. Yes, it is. I can give you the names of the individuals who served prison time for stealing elections.
Okay, that's McGauffin County. You did say it with the plurality, though. There are elections stolen.
Well, there was
in
more than one election. There's no doubt. Yeah, and there's also elections from Clay County. I mean, we can continue if you want to, but this is, it's irregular, but it does occur. So when people on the right or the left say it doesn't occur, they're just not being truthful. It does occur. There's a whole group of lawyers who practice elections law, and they practice these cases. So we have people in prison today who are serving for elections fraud. Again, I don't want to be overspeak here. It is not prevalent. Our elections can be counted upon, but it is true that we can tighten things up. And the story I often give is, I've lived in my house for about 7 years. The guy I bought my house from, and this is true as of today, the guy I bought my house from moved out of state, and he still registered to vote in my district. Now, he hasn't voted. I don't think. I hope not. But there's the opportunity for mischief. And those types of things on how to better clean the rolls are the kinds of things that this task force can address.
Okay, finally, we're going to run out of time here. House Bill 309, people here obviously are eyeballing that very closely because right. The measure essentially is bringing about changes for the power structure of Louisville Metro government and the Louisville mayor. Why does the state need to intervene and exercise deeper power and not let a community run itself?
Well, state law requires Louisville to vote partisan. It's state law that requires that, so it has to take state law to change that. There are over 400 cities in Kentucky. Only seven are partisan. There are over 80 cities in Jefferson County. Only two, Louisville and Shively, are partisan. Most big cities, most of our peer cities, are nonpartisan. It is because of particular legislators that were in power when we merged that Louisville is partisan. What this will do is make it nonpartisan, and my hope is that the mayoral candidates in the future will have to hunt votes all around the county. I'm assuming, Terry, that we'll elect mayors just like we do our judges. It's an open primary, and then everybody can vote. 10.6% of my district's independents. They'll be able to vote as well, and we'll narrow it down to the top two. And I'm assuming, Terry, those will be two Democrats. So this doesn't help my interest. It doesn't help Republicans. I'm assuming there'll be two Democrats. What it helps for me is two things. One, because everybody's voting, I think they'll be more moderate. And number two, because everybody's voting, the people in Valley Station and Fern Creek and J-Town and Middletown, they matter too.
And you feel like their votes don't count now, or they're that yeah, because Democrats seem to be a lock that people don't pay attention?
I'll give you, well, if you win the Democrat primary right now, you're automatically mayor. And I don't think that's helpful. I think everybody should have a vote. And here's a perfect example of why it matters. The last two times that the mayor has been in my office in Frankfort to give me his road plan, and that's, you know, what roads, what infrastructure needs do we have in the county. One time he gave me a road, I think it had 10 roads, well, plan had 10 roads, the next time it was 14. Only one of those roads in one of those 2 years was outside the water zone. Terry, the people in Fairdale and the people in Fern Creek and the people in Prospect, they've got infrastructure needs as well. And our population is exploding out there. So the best way to make sure that the mayor cares about the roads down in Dixie Highway and off of Gill Church Road and so forth is to make sure that mayor has to hunt votes all around the county. That's what this will do. Lexington's mayor is nonpartisan. Lexington's former mayor, Jim Gray, who now serves in the Beshear administration, said that the fact that his city was nonpartisan helped him and helped Lexington. I think it will do nothing to help Louisville. Again, it's going to be a Democrat. I think the top two vote-getters will almost always be Democrats, but they're going to be more moderate, and they're going to be required to go look for votes in every place in Jefferson County.
Last thing. I know we're way over here. Once the census numbers are complete and everybody has all that, is there a gerrymandering plan to split up the third district in a different configuration, sending a chunk of Louisville toward the western part of Kentucky, another chunk up the river toward Cincinnati, and a third chunk down toward Tennessee to try and get John Yarmuth out of office and open it up for a Republican congressperson?
I haven't heard any talk about that at all. If that were the case, I wouldn't support it. The people of Louisville are entitled to a congressperson, and I'm not going to – I'll fight, not only not support it, I'll fight against any effort to crack Louisville. I would say, though, that there are the good government types that have drawn up maps, and one of their main goals is to make sure that there's as balanced Republican-Democrat districts as possible, and their suggestion is to crack Jefferson County like that. So I haven't heard any of that talk in the State House among Republicans, and if that comes to pass, you can count on me giving every single effort I can give to oppose that. I do not support John Yarmuth, but I'm in the minority in Jefferson County on that question. And John Yarmuth, if he runs again, he's entitled to that seat. If he gets elected, I assume he will. But I'm not going to be supporting any effort to correct my hometown.
Jason, great talking to you again. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Terry.
State Rep. Jason Nemus, back in a minute on News Radio 840 WHAS.